on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk, independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Monday, October 20th, 2025 edition. And there's no denying it now, the fall season is in full swing. Summer is behind us, and we are, I know we're ready for fall here. And Thanksgiving, yeah, it's a little over a month away. Halloween, just 11 days away. So this fourth quarter is already moving by pretty fast. We're already into earnings season as well. So we're starting to get a lot of data there when it comes to third quarter earnings. And our job here is to unpack it all for you, the trends that are persisting in markets and giving you perspective of where the opportunities and risks are. That's what this hour is always about, answering your finance and investment questions and bringing you data and perspectives so that you can make better decisions with your money. It's difficult in this headline-driven, social media-driven ecosystem that we all live in some way, shape, or form. And that can distract us from the realities on the ground. But our job is to bring you back to where the middle is. You know, your biases and your emotions can bring you in all different directions. And it's usually not right on target. It's dragging you away from the right target. And so our job is to refocus you each and every weekday. So in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and run down the show topics for the hour. But first, let's tackle this caller question now.
Hi, everyone. Joe from Pittsburgh. Thanks, guys, for an excellent podcast. Always enjoy listening to you. Calling about ticker POOL, Pool Corp. Looking forward to hearing what you think. Thanks.
POOL. And this is a company, as you would imagine, with a ticker symbol and calling Pool Corp. They operate 448 pool equipment and supply centers in North and South America and Europe. Okay. And this is a name that did very well during the pandemic. People were building pools. They were trying to, be outside more. They were able to borrow money to maybe remodel their house and put in a pool, et cetera. So earnings went from $5.83 in 2019 all the way to $18.43 in 2022. But that's certainly come down. Last year, $11.07. This year, $10.85. So it's been in a earnings downtrend, and the stock's been in a downtrend ever since 2021 as well, when it peaked out at $575 or so, somewhere around there. Now it's at $294. So relative strength 17, not great. Now, if you look at based on forward-looking earnings, $11, it's still about a high 20s multiple. That's pretty high for a name that has very slow growth. They are supposed to get back to growth this next kind of four quarters, but it's still modest, only mid-single digits. What are you going to pay for a company that's growing about the rate of the overall economy? Probably more of a market multiple. Now, the good thing here is they do have good cash flow, very solid profitability, about 30% return on equity, although that has come down from its recent high, so that's a bit of a worry. But overall, I like the business. It's just I'm not paying this multiple. And you look at the chart, you know, when something's in a downtrend like this, especially coming off of record earnings, record multiples that it's trading at, and there's no real big crash. It's just kind of a slow slog downward. What will eventually happen is investors will give up. They'll get tired of waiting for it to turn around, and then you'll get a final capitulation on high volume, and that will usually set up a good buying entry point. Problem is, you're not really seeing that yet. It's still just in that slow grind lower. And so I see no reason to jump in front of this. It's certainly a name to have on the watch list because of that good balance sheet, that good profitability. But I'm going to give you, I think this is headed down to 225. That's an area that I think makes sense from a fundamental standpoint. And there's good support there. That's kind of where it broke out back in, 2020? And that's where I'd buy it, 225. Now let's go take a live call. Jarek from Canada wants to talk about silver.
Hi, Justin. How are you doing?
Doing pretty well. You own some silver?
I do, yeah. I have a few positions. And as you've seen, the silver price is, it's on a tear. So I just wanted to have a conversation about that. Like, what's your opinion on this recent price action? What do you see for, like, short, medium, long-term forecasts? I know it's kind of 50% industrial metal and tied to the economy, but also, you know, it could be part of a, like, a debasement kind of a trade, and a lot of stuff going on in London with the LBMA and backwardation.
There you go.
So, like, what's your take on this? And I'm like, I got in April 24 and rode up some really good highs, and I probably have like a, you know, 3 to 5 year kind of time frame. Kind of invested in a lot of like miners and stuff like that. Yeah. So I know they have cycles and things like that, right? But what's your take on all that?
I still think there's room to run on gold and silver. Now, they are a bit overbought now. Kind of reminds me of what I saw. This is even more intense than we saw back in April when you saw gold on the cover of Barron's, and it kind of went through a consolidation period. And I think you're seeing that even more intense after this recent run. So there's a lot of near-term speculation, a lot of what I call weak hands. And when you get those weak hands chasing the recent move, you know, 10 to 20% pullback in a lot of these names, for those people, it's going to feel like the end of the world because they have no sense of how, what type of volatility these type of names have. A 20% pullback, especially in the miners, silver or gold miners, that ain't nothing. That's a regular Tuesday, you know. But for new precious metal investors, it's going to feel like the end of the world, and they're going to probably get shaken out in those events. And I think you are probably approaching something like that. But I still think I still am bullish through next year. And I think gold goes to at least probably 6,000 an ounce when this cycle is done. Now, where does silver end up? You know, it tends to go up in concert. However, I do think if I'm leaning one way or the other, gold versus silver, I'm still leaning gold. Why? Because there is that consistent demand from central banks around the world. And gold just historically has a more solid place in the monetary system over the long term. Silver kind of comes and goes, and it's gold's little cousin. And it does have some, like you said, some industrial applications. So there can be some potential decline in demand if the economy continues to kind of meander like it's been recently. So I still like both. I will say that. I think everyone should have some exposure to both, but I'm still leaning on gold, as well as I would expect a choppy period coming up that to me still is a buy the dip type of environment to operate in.
Okay. And with that gold versus silver kind of allocation, like if that gold to silver ratio breaks down, like would that not be quite beneficial for silver?
Yeah, of course it would. It would. Yeah, I mean that's the point of a ratio, right? If that ratio breaks down, that means silver's outperforming gold, and it has as of the last month or so. But if you zoom out, really this entire cycle, gold's been really outperforming. Let me pull up a longer term chart here. Yeah, so gold has just been on a tear, and I still think it will continue to outperform. but can have bouts where silver does outperform over the last, like over the last couple months. So I would hold both. Now we're moving to a break. It's very likely you'll probably be making several important investment decisions here in the fourth quarter. Before you do, I recommend you look at our new comprehensive 2025 Q4 Economic and Market Outlook Report. It is a free read and it's posted now at investtalk.com. My phone lines are open waiting for you right now at 888-99-CHART.
The prosperous future you envision for yourself and your family will not happen without strategic planning and definitive action.
Let's go to Brian in San Mateo looking at Roku.
And I wanted your take on the technical picture.
For the unprepared investor, market volatility around the world demonstrates risk, but opportunities wait for no one. And now may be the best time in years to invest wisely, to invest strategically.
What I would do is keep saving and look for other opportunities.
But how can you decide what sectors to avoid, which stocks to buy, and what might be the best price point?
I'm new to investing, and my friend Wesley recommended your podcast a year ago.
The next decisive step on your path to financial freedom begins with a Spotify search for InvestTalk. Listen live or download the free podcast.
Justin Klein is here, and he's ready with answers to your finance and investment questions. Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 40 minutes or so, and our main focus point is about how asset tokenization is revolutionizing global finance. And everyone's heard of Bitcoin, but the underlying technology, blockchain, I think will have in the long run a bigger impact on the global economy, making it easier to invest and do so with more transparency and make it more accessible to everyone around the world. So we're going to look at that and kind of zoom out on how markets are likely to evolve over the next decade or two, especially when it comes to digitizing assets. In addition, we'll talk about some other topics. One is, why are gold and stocks going up together? This is relatively unprecedented. Typically, the correlation between the two is zero, meaning they don't really have much, they don't move together in general. But right now they are. So we'll talk about why that might be. Also, can financial literacy improve GDP growth? We'll look at some data that is saying that. And then lastly, if we have time, we'll talk about U.S. exceptionalism. And is the leadership of U.S. equities starting to flip to more of a world allocation? So we'll talk about that. We also have voice bank calls about American Financial Group, AFG, and then TransAlta Corp, TAC. And then we have some questions that came in via the comment section over on our YouTube channel as well. And of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions right now at 888-99-CHART. We love your live calls, and that's why we are going to talk with Sid in North Carolina. He's asking about MUSA.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have seen this stock was quite going well between 2018 all the way till last year. Mm-hmm. The graph looks pretty healthy, and suddenly, I don't know what happened this year, though I don't have this position. But this year, I could see that it's almost down from 550 to 370 plus. Mm-hmm. So is something going wrong with this name, though? It's in my radar. Is it a good time to buy this kind of the name, or you think we should ignore? Thank you for your time.
No problem. Looking at Murphy USA, MUSA is the symbol, and about $7 billion market cap. And they have about 1,700 fuel stations and convenience stores throughout 27 states in the U.S. And it was a name that was growing dramatically. Once again, 2019, $4.86 in earnings. And then $28.10 in 2022, as people were getting out moving, traveling, a lot of excess money sent to people, and they were buying stuff at convenience stores. And that has reversed in a big way. In fact, earnings are now supposed to be only $23.67 this year. So it's in a downtrend. I don't see any major support right now. So it's not a name that I would be buying because the technicals are just too poor. I like the business, but until there's some sort of capitulation to the downside and reversal, I'm not buying it. I just don't like the trends. Now we're going to a break. I'm here ready to tackle your questions at 888-99-CHART.
Invest Talk Innovators. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero interview company leaders, founders, and visionaries. So head over to the Invest Talk YouTube channel and look for Invest Talk Innovators.
It's how you get through and ask your question on today's show. Let's take a quick look at the markets today. We had a nice solid update on optimism around the U.S. and China trade negotiations. President Trump expressed some optimism. Market like that. Obviously, there's still a lot up in the air. About 9 days away, I think on 29th, is when that meeting is supposed to happen in South Korea. And really, we don't know, right? This is probably going, as you've seen, you're probably going to get a couple of days from now, maybe a bad tweet on it. Who knows? But that certainly brought life to markets after the sell-off last week. Treasuries were a bit stronger across the curve with rates down a little bit. Dollar index was up 0.2%. Gold finished up 3.5%, a new all-time high once again. Bitcoin up 4.1%. WTI crude was down 0.2%. You had the S&P up a little over 1%. And the NASDAQ up about 1.4% on the day. Small caps, Russell 2000 up nearly 2% on the day. And of the big movers, you had Apple up 4%. But names like NVIDIA and Broadcom were down. But across the board, some pretty nice strength. Now let's go talk to Richard in Santa Clarita. He wants to talk about AT&T.
Yeah, hi, Justin. I wanted to ask you about AT&T. Got it at, you know, price of about 21. It's up to about 26 right now. It's been as high as 28, maybe close to 29. Pays, you know, the 4.25% dividend. I just wondering, I remember Steve used to always say AT&T and Verizon, you know, you buy those not for the growth. We're going to an AT&T, you know, it'll get as low as, you know, 19, 18, 17, and it's going to go maybe as high as 30. It's not going to go super high. It's not going to go super low. I know they have a lot of debt. They spun off the Warner Brothers Discovery a while back, which was a pretty good move. But, you know, given that scenario and given how telecommunications are, is it, you know, if it goes up in that range, good to sell it. And maybe at some point, if you get it again, you get it later on when it comes down, because it has that, tends to have that range, I think. And I'm not so sure that being in telecommunications right now is the best sector to be in.
Yeah,
so,
I agree with that.
Good to get rid of it at this point.
Yeah, frankly, I would get rid of it. If you just look at the trailing 15-year returns, you're talking about 4.7% annualized. Not that great. You know, one of the big issues with AT&T and Verizon is that they have a lot of debt. And one of the reasons why, so first off, when rates go up on debt, their carrying costs go up. And so that's why this went down so dramatically when rates started to rise. You know, it went from the low 20s all the way to a low of around 14. Now it's rallied back as rates have moderated a little bit, but still I think we're in a longer term uptrend when it comes to rates. And they're also losing market share. So their T-Mobile is taking share. And it's just a very slow growth business. And it's actually negative growth. Last year, earnings were down 10%. This year, earnings are supposed to be down 5%. Now, next year, earnings are supposed to bounce back, but those estimates are coming down as well. So I just see that, remember, there's opportunity costs with this capital. What are you going to do with it? And to be honest, I rather own fixed income. You're not, you know, if you want limited upside, I want also limited downside. And a name like this, if it's not operating properly, you know, that level of debt could spiral it into bankruptcy. Now, I'm not predicting that, but in bankruptcy, the equity is worth nothing. Okay. And at least in a bond bankruptcy, you're getting 40 to 60 cents on your dollar back. Okay. And, you know, you're limiting your upside, but like you said, AT&T, there's not a whole lot of upside either because there's little to no growth and they're losing market share and they have a lot of debt and it's a very mature market that they're operating in. So if you're talking about telecom exposure, you know, we looked at the telecom space recently and we ended up buying a foreign name. And before, of the three major ones, we like T-Mobile the most, but the better opportunities were overseas. And AT&T and Verizon were just kind of bloated, had bloated balance sheets and losing market share and just weren't that exciting. And people get enamored with that dividend, but that's not what we're looking at. We care about the dividend to a degree, but it's very low on our priority list. We're looking at profitability. And frankly, profitability isn't horrible, but it's not great either. So I see no reason to own AT&T. I would move on and find something better. Thanks for the call. Now, I'm still going to get to today's focus point. So hang on. And tomorrow on the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this topic, when and how to change financial advisors. We will provide a comprehensive guide for investors so that they can assess their current financial advisor's performance, communication skills, fee structure, and outline the necessary steps for a smooth and compliant transition to a new wealth management professional. That story tomorrow. But for now, I'm Justin Klein. I'm ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
'25 rolls on, and you've got finance and investment questions for Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero. Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
Now let's talk about tokenization and how it's going to revolutionize global finance. And this is, I think, an underappreciated aspect of the crypto industry, because everyone's just, it's been bastardized. It's all about number go up, making money, YOLO options, leverage, you know, the MicroStrategies of the world. And it's just all about speculation. That's it. But if you zoom out and you say, why was this created? Why did this come to be? So much of that ethos has been lost to rampant speculators and fraudsters, to be honest with you. But the reason why I think the whole ecosystem will endure is because there are some good foundations to bring a financial system to the world. And I think eventually we will get there, but it's going to take a lot of time. Now, one of the core bedrocks of having the world operate on a crypto ecosystem is tokenization. And it's not just about cryptocurrencies and moving value in that way, because that's what the whole idea is, right? Easily transmit value from one person, one entity to another. But tokenization can make so many aspects of traditional finance a lot easier, cheaper, more efficient. Now, the Genius Act really focused on the stablecoins, which is just basically a money market account for the cryptocurrency environment. So think of a money market account where you can take that money and just go buy stocks, go buy a bond, go buy an ETF. Stablecoins are, okay, now we can go buy other cryptocurrencies. But what about other digital assets? And that's what digitization and tokenization of actual real world assets will eventually be about. It's about leveraging the blockchain technology to digitize and fractionalize everything in the real world. Think of stocks, bonds, real estate, whatever it is, gold, silver, etc. And this is where the true transformation of the economy can really happen. It will create openness of ownership to assets that were previously very difficult to gain access to. Now, that brings risks, but that's for the regulators to figure out. And it's not just about us here in the US or developed worlds. It's about emerging markets as well. Because think of those people that they weren't in the hardwired game. They came to the digital age with a smartphone, with their main connection to the world via their cellular network. And so they're used to this. And in many countries, they're very used to moving money via their phones. And so now it's going to be more than just moving money. And what the tokenization will allow the system to do is to make everything programmable, traceable, and easily transferable from one person to the next. And you can buy portions of an asset as opposed to the entire asset. Think of an apartment building or any commercial building. You can buy fractions of that building as opposed to the entire thing. And you can do it instantly, 24/7. So it's really going to drop barriers and open up markets to the entire world. It's going to make things more efficient to transfer. Smart contracts will make compliance checks, dividend payments, or settlements happen instantaneously, reducing human error and overall lower operational expenses. So for example, think of if a tenant pays rent, a portion that can automatically be sent to a fractional owner of that apartment building. And then you don't have to open an account at a Fidelity or a Schwab. You can actually own the asset in a cold wallet or however you want. And it can be transferred right then. Think of when you sell an asset, you have to wait a day. If you want to sell your stock, you have to wait a day for that money to settle. This can happen pretty instantaneously. Now, ultimately, it's going to be come down to the risks. So, and the challenges. So limited interoperability, meaning what's the standard blockchain network and how does that interface with traditional legacy infrastructure? That's going to be a challenge. Legal frameworks, whose country do these assets live under when it comes to the law? And then liquidity concerns. So just because it can be fractionalized and put on a blockchain doesn't mean that there's clarity on the quality of the asset and enough buyers to really go and pay for it. So there's a lot of challenges here, but it's definitely the road ahead. It's just probably going to take another decade or two for this to really mature in a big way. And frankly, this is where the most value within the crypto space comes from. Now let's go take a live call. Will in San Diego wants to talk about ILMN, which is, if I remember correctly, that is Illumina. The owner looking to buy it?
Yes. No, I'm looking to buy it. I've owned it in the past and, went down. So now I'm looking at it again. What do you think?
I'm trying to remember. Is this the one that made a really bad acquisition? I'm trying to remember why this kind of fell from grace. Yeah, I remember this made some sort of an acquisition, I think around DNA testing. It escapes me exactly the details. But
yeah,
earnings fell.
I vaguely remember that. Yeah.
Earnings fell pretty dramatically from $5.91 in 2021 to only 87 cents in 2023. Now it's supposed to bounce back to $4.50 this year. Let me look at its balance sheet because that's a big factor here. Yeah, good balance sheet, minimal debt. Free cash flow, a little less than $1 billion. Now that is approaching a new all-time high. That's a good thing. Return equity is 60%. I like that. No dividend, which is fine. And let me take a look here. This is interesting. Look at the chart because I want to see what type of strength. It's starting to find its footing. This is very interesting. The valuation is fine. Enterprise value to EBITDA right around 12 or 13, kind of the low end of where it's historically traded. And earnings are just a bounce back to $4.84 next year. So it's about a market multiple based on where it's at. So I'm going to give this one, honestly, a thumbs up. I don't think it's cheap, but it's reasonably valued with a good balance sheet, good profitability, rising free cash flow, and it looks good. You know, it's taking that cash flow and it's starting to buy back shares as of late. I like that. You know, hasn't done that really in its entire existence. And now it's starting to retire shares and figure out what to do with that nice cash flow. So I'm going to give Illumina a thumbs up. ILMN.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Interesting one. Let's drop in another caller question now.
Hi, Duncan from New York. Thank you for all that you do. I'm calling about stock ticker TAC. It is an energy play, and the reason why I'm looking into this is because as I listen to the great advice that you guys will give on the podcast, I'm looking for another picks and shovels, but I'm also looking for something that is not a U.S. stock. So from Fidelity.com, what the stock is an energy play in Canada. And I did hear it from, you know, an Instagram investor, so that's why I'm getting, like, some other professional advice. But I see that its return of equity is in the negative. I see that they have like a lot of debt too. The guy was saying that it was more of a trade rather than investment. But I just wanted to know your 2 cents. And thank you very much. Have a good day. Bye.
This is TransAlta. And this is really more of a utility. Okay. And it's gone up dramatically. I could see why it would be a trade. But I'm not seeing the requisite growth in earnings to really justify this. Earnings net this year are supposed to go up 58%, which is nice, but then drop 52% next year down to 20 cents. And it's a $16.86 stock. Now, I'm assuming this is some sort of optimism around AI infrastructure demand and the demand for natural gas. And it looks like they have a lot of that exposure. But why is it not translating to analyst estimate updates? That would be my big question. Now, as a trade, sure, the momentum is good. It's clearly in the AI. It's an AI trade. And that's the way it's acting. And you have to treat it as such. So if you want to buy it for a trade, sure. But the fundamentals do not support this from a cash flow perspective. They have a lot of debt. They have negative return on equity. So this is not a buy and hold. This is a trade at best. Thanks for the call. Let's talk about gold and equities. Gold is acting like it's the 1970s and equities are acting like it's the late 1990s. And that's atypical to see both rising together. And the question is why? Now, the simple explanation is liquidity. Governments, central banks continue to roll out stimulus to expand budgets. Austerity is nowhere to be seen really around the world. And so fiat currencies are being debased globally. No real place to hide except for harder assets like gold and silver. So liquidity can drive that trade as well as speculation in markets. And so clearly, massive liquidity has something to do with it. Even the Federal Reserve. Currently, they say policy is mildly restrictive, even though rates are lower than nominal GDP growth. And households in general are also finding new ways to gain exposure to assets. A big factor in this is apps make it easier to think of Robinhood. I see Robinhood app, it talks about how much leverage you can have or how much buying power you can have. And it's like a game. And frankly, I think that's a big part of what is happening here is that these average investors are looking at that and saying, well, I have more money to play with. And it's naturally adding more leverage to the system, which creates more risk. But when liquidity is good, like I said, that can feel fine. So the hyper-financialization is boosting the overall demand for risk assets, even while there's a consistent bid for safer assets, debasement assets like gold and silver. But I think the real story is this is a fundamental transformational change in the global financial system that is just beginning. It started with the Ukraine war and the United States confiscating Russian treasuries. And since then, central banks globally have been buying gold hand over fist. And now you're starting to see the average investor jump in as well. That narrative has begun. Demand for gold ETFs is up ninefold this year. And the third quarter alone saw the highest ever ETF flows into gold. So the kind of slow dribble into the gold market from central banks has turned into a flood from the retail investor that not only has a bunch of buying power, but is also seeing the fiscal deficit that is not stopping. And they're underallocated. Only about 2% of portfolios are in gold. So there's still a lot more room for those portfolios, for portfolio allocations to rise. Now, a lot of people might say it's inflation. And I don't think it's inflation either, because the bond market is signaling that inflation is still going to be 2.5-3% over the long term. What I actually think it is geopolitical concerns. See what's happening in the Middle East. See what's happening in Russia and Ukraine. See what's happening with our domestic political situation as well. So that is really the answer here, is that liquidity is driving both assets, but only one is being really driven by the rise in geopolitical concerns, and that is gold. This is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein, and we have one goal here. Each and every weekday, I help you achieve your own version of financial freedom, and our work continues after this final break. So get your questions in right now on Invest Talk at 888-99-CHART.
Millions of downloads have proved there's value in every Invest Talk podcast. Call anytime, 24/7, Invest Talk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, this is Invest Talk, but we don't just talk about investing here. We also try to educate you more broadly, making sure that you are well-rounded in your financial literacy. That's not just getting a stock tip or understanding what's going on in one particular sector, but having a basis for smart financial decisions. And that starts with savings habits, spending habits, understanding good debt versus bad debt, diversification, etc. And there's a new study from the Principal Financial Group. And what they looked at were different economies. And what they found was that there's a direct link between improving financial literacy and lower loan defaults and stronger economic growth. So what this is saying is that financial literacy is not just important on an individual level. It's important on a national and even global level as well. And the reason for that is because when governments are trying to create a financial outcome like monetary policy, raising or lowering interest rates, people who are financially educated know what that means and how to take advantage of it, and how to avoid fraud, for example, how to avoid getting taken advantage of by borrowing from the wrong people or borrowing at a higher rate than they should. And so less money is sucked out of the real economy and into the financial economy. And that's one problem we have here domestically, is that too much of our economy has been financialized. Think of all the businesses that all the people that their businesses refinancing loans, which is certainly needed, but it shouldn't be the majority of our economy. Think M&A activity and everything surrounding creating financial transactions and financialization of businesses, private equity, things like that. The real economy, real growth, is based on people keeping more of their income and spending it wisely, spending it on productive assets, productive endeavors for their life and their family. And financial literacy allows you to do that. And what they found is each 1 percentage point improvement in financial literacy levels equates to a 2.78 point fall in household loan default rates. The direct link. The more you are financially literate, the better chance you have of not falling into bankruptcy. A 10-point boost in financial literacy levels equates to a potential boost to GDP over and above expected rates of 0.3 percentage points over a 4-year period per year. Doesn't sound like a lot, but in an economy that's many trillions, for example, like our economy, that equates to big gains. Remember, they build on themselves. Now, what countries dominate the financial literacy rankings? Well, Singapore is number one. And go look at their economic growth over the last couple of decades. It's very, very strong. Who else are in the top 10? Hong Kong, South Korea, and Thailand. Where does the U.S. rank? 7th. UK is 10th. Now, where are countries falling off? Well, it's mainly when the employers are not picking up their end of the bargain. They're not. So if your employer isn't bringing financial education along with your 401k, for example, that is a big problem. And so I love this study because the message is make sure you are financially literate. You're well-rounded. It's not just about getting the latest stock tip. I'm Justin Klein. And if today's show made you think about your own financial picture in any way, investments, taxes, retirement planning, Roth conversions, Social Security, strategy, whatever that is, we offer a free portfolio review to help bring clarity and confidence to whatever you're doing. Just head over to investtalk.com, click on the portfolio review button, schedule time with me. If you think you're listening, we encourage you to tell your friends and family about a free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes or Spotify, and watch our videos over on our YouTube channel as well. Be sure to rate and review on iTunes. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.